you know, I'm married, I'm alcoholic. Man, you know, before this meeting, I said a prayer to calm my nerves, and the Zoom bombers happened. I'm just, like, worked up now, but let's see, 34 years and 10 minutes. Well, thank you so much, John, for asking me to be here tonight, allowing me to be of service. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was the last stop on the block. You know, I was just exhausted. I was so tired. Life was so complicated because everything was just so forced. Everything in my life was so forced, just built on this, like, foundation of lies and manipulation. You know, it was like my jobs was forced. My relationships were forced. The places I lived were forced. You know, lies on the application, lies in the relationship. Like, you know, everywhere just manipulating, trying to, like, put all the pieces together to get this life I thought I needed. You know, this life that I thought if I had, I could stop drinking, that I could stop using. But no matter what relationship I had, no matter what job I got, no matter what house I lived in, car I had, no matter what thing outside of myself I was able to grasp, I was still miserable. You know, I was miserable because, you know, alcohol was really the only solution that I had for all of these feelings that I just couldn't deal with on my own. You know, like, I started drinking at the age of 15. And when I had that first drink, it was like I could feel the weight of the world finally release from my shoulders. Like, I could finally breathe. You know, I had so much anger. I was so sad and anxious and depressed. And I just had, like, all of this ickiness inside that I didn't know how to feel. Like, I didn't know how to handle these emotions. I didn't know how to manage my feelings. And it's like I found alcohol and other forms of alcohol, and that just did for me what I could not do for myself. You know, and it worked until it stopped working, and life just became a mess. You know, it was full of just, like, chaos and just destruction, and I was just that tornado just, like, ripping and roaring through everyone's life, you know, destroying everything around me. And, you know, I finally, like, at the age of 31, just, like, was just tired enough to be like, okay, it's like, I can't, I've tried white-knuckling this, like, I've been in and out of methadone clinics. Like, I've done everything that I could possibly think of doing. I changed my friends, you know, I changed the job. It's like everything that More About Alcoholism, you know, talks about. It's like, I tried that. Like, I tried just doing beer and not drinking liquor. I tried not going to the bars, you know, I tried just drinking at home. I tried just drinking no drugs. And it's like, none of that worked for me. It's like, all the time, every morning, I would wake up and I would find myself in the same spot that I've always been, asking myself, how did I get here? Why did I do this? Why can't I stop? You know, and so it's like, 31 years old, I have a daughter, I'm married, and I'm miserable as hell, and I don't know how to just make the noise in my head just stop. And so I decided, I finally, in this moment, when I decided to, like, kind of give up, like, I just surrendered. I had this moment of, like, okay, I can't do this, I need help. It's like, in that moment, I found a little bit of freedom, you know, and I still didn't go to AA right away. You know, I was still going to the methadone clinic. I was still on, like, antidepressants. I was still working this, like, weed maintenance program and doing these other things. And I wasn't ready to let go of everything right away. And I'm not saying, like, that's how you should do it. This is how I did it, you know. There's no right or wrong way I found in these rooms. But I came into these rooms, you know, working my weed maintenance program, still, like, working on methadone, trying to decrease my dose, and I just, like, I got a sponsor, and I started, like, working these steps to the best of my ability in the state that I was in, you know, and it's like I was introduced to this power greater than myself, who, like, I was still, despite, like, having moments where I could feel him working in my life, you know, I still was, like, having trouble connecting. Like, I couldn't quite connect. I was still in this fog, and I wasn't making that connection, you know, with, like, the methadone and everything that I was on and, like, my trouble connecting, you know. And it's like I was having a lot of trouble turning over my will, you know. It's like I still was, like, despite doing this inventory, despite getting down to those causes and conditions, I was still just, like, overran by fear. You know, and I was having a lot of trouble trusting in God and having a lot of trouble not, like, still trying to put these pieces together and still, like, seeking outside of myself for these things that I think I need that will help me feel better, you know. And again, I'm working these steps to the best of my ability. I'm, like, getting service commitments in the program, and shit. It's like everything in my life like started like it was like on the up and up, but still I was having trouble like connecting to God, you know. And it's like, for me, I've learned that in this program, for me to stay sober is like I have to not just like maintain the spiritual connection, but I have to like increase the spiritual connection. You know, it's like I have to constantly seek and be doing this work to try to connect with God. And I was still having trouble doing that, you know, still smoking weed, you know, still not making that connection, you know, of why I can't fully connect with God. And all of a sudden, it was just like, I don't know, I just started, as quickly as those promises started, like, revealing themselves in my lives, they started unraveling, you know. And it's like, what I see now is that, like, although, it's like I said, you know, coming in here on doing, like, my own kind of AA program, you know, not by the book, what I see is that it was causing me to rely on other things other than God. You know, like, I could not increase this connection because I'm still relying on these other substances. You know, there's something still blocking me, you know, from connecting to my higher power. And I'm still making these, like, decisions in self, and I'm like, my sponsor talks about like stringing together decisions, and I'm stringing together like one bad decision after the next, like all of these decisions just like based in self, based in fear, trying to manipulate situations. And it's like the more bad decisions I string together, it's like the further and further I got away from God, you know. And it's like I came in 2018, and in 2020 September, I drank again. Right now, my sobriety date is September 22nd, 2020. You know, and I am so grateful for me for picking up that drink again, because without that, I would not have been able. I don't think I would have taken a look at all of these things. I think I still would have been sitting here, and I still would have been smoking my weed, and I still would have been, you know, working like Miriam's version of like Alcoholics Anonymous. And like what that did for me is that it woke me up, you know. It's like I had that same gift of desperation that I had when I first came into the rooms, you know. And it's like I'm really grateful for that, because I hear a lot in the rooms that, oh, once when you relapse, you don't have that same gift of desperation that you had the first time you came in. But for me, what I found is that the road narrows, you know. And like, despite doing these other things during the time I first came in here, like I still was creating this new life for myself. I still was like creating this like new sense of like consciousness, you know, like these principles, like I, these morals that I didn't have when I first came in the room, I still started to grasp despite everything. So it's like, you know, after I drank that morning when I woke up, all I could think about was how it works, you know, and all I could think about was how I have not let go absolutely to this program, you know, that I have tried to hold on to these old ideas of this idea that I am different, this idea that, like, yes, I might be an alcoholic who needs the 12 steps, I might be an alcoholic that needs the room and the sponsor. It's like, however, I am still not like the people in these rooms, and I can still do A, B, and C. And what I found is that I'm no different from everyone else in these rooms. And so when I came back this time, I let go. I let go of all those ideas, all the ideas I had about the program, all the ideas that I had about the book and sponsorship and everything. And I gave everything to this program, you know, and I started working with my sponsor again, and without putting anything into my body. And I had this new state of clarity, you know. It's like the fog lifted even more, and I found that the more that I surrender to this program, the more that I surrender to this power greater than myself, the more I allow this power to work in my life, and I create space for him to work, you know. And like, that's what I've been doing for the past almost 90 days now. You know, like, I reworked the step with my sponsor. I just got through step 12 with her. So now I'm back to trying to work with other alcoholics. You know, it's like, I went back through the steps and new things came up on my fourth step. You know, new resentments. Not even, I won't even say new resentments. Resentments that I believe had always been there, but that I just was not at a place in my recovery to have revealed to me yet. You know, and all of that was revealed this time coming around, and there still might be rocks that have to be turned, you know, and I have to be vigilant. I have to make sure that talk to my sponsor, that I continue to work with my sponsor, you know, and I'm really grateful for being here tonight. I'm really grateful for you guys. John, thanks again for asking me to be here. And with that, I'm out.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wayne, and I'm an alcoholic. I must confess, I am really nervous to be here. I'm really humbled and flattered. Thank you, John, for asking me. It's funny. I find myself at a pulpit preaching in church, and I don't get as nervous as I get when I'm in front of an AA group, because I can't hide behind the pulpit. I can't hide behind the guitar when I'm on stage. It's just me and my story, my experience, strength and hope. In our vulnerability, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we see our experience can benefit others. My sobriety date is May 28th, 2018. That is my last sobriety date. I pray to God it's my last. It is nowhere near my first. This morning I got to sit down with a newcomer, and we got to get into the book together. As I was waiting, and my sponsor's texting me right now, he says, tell the truth and don't F it up, which is a common thing around here in El Sobrante. One caveat I need to share with you, my story includes drugs in it. Normally in Alcoholics Anonymous, I do not share through, singleness of purpose, but I cannot share my entire experience, strength, and hope without sharing some specifics. So if this does, this is what it is. If there's any part of my story that offends you, please talk with your sponsor. I have found that when I'm encountering things that bother me, it's usually something that I need to look at in myself. And here's one other thing. If I start talking about anything in my drunkalogue and it makes sense to you, you might be an alcoholic, because my drunkalogue is insanity. It is absolutely insanity. It does not make any sense at all. I find myself all over the big book, but primarily on page 21. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. You know, I've been around long enough. I've worked the steps enough. I know I can tell you exactly right now why I'm an alcoholic. And the best way to say why I'm an alcoholic is to start off by saying why I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I was molested for 3 years by a military police officer when I was a very little boy. I'm not an alcoholic because I was beaten frequently by my mother as a child. I was emotionally and physically abused for most of my young life. I'm not an alcoholic because I grew up very poor in some horrible neighborhoods, in some situations. I'm not an alcoholic for any of those reasons. I'm an alcoholic because when I put alcohol in me, all bets are off. All bets are off. All of these things I did go through in my youth and in my life, all of these things made coping with life on life's terms more difficult, but all of these things ultimately are God's gift to overcome. And I don't, I may have used these as excuses to drink, excuses to use, but they're not why I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because if I put alcohol in my body in any form, all bets are off. Like I said, I had a very difficult life, and I found early on that I would escape. At first, I would escape in imagination, in writing poetry and drawing and all of that. And later in my junior high and high school years, I would escape through alcohol, and I would escape through drugs. When I drank, I became one of those really angry ones. So one of the spiritual lessons that I learned early on was that you never get away with anything. My first bit of sobriety was forced upon me through circumstances of my own actions. At age 19, I went to the California Youth Authority for hurting somebody very, very badly in an alcoholic blackout when I was 12 and a half years old. At age 19, I got asked about a party that I'd gone to that I barely remembered, and I was strung out drinking every day, and my life was a complete mess, and for some reason, and to this day, it must have been God. I told the truth probably for the first time in a couple of years and said, I don't really remember what happened, but I did that, This was my first encounter with what we call grace, a favor that I cannot earn. This person that I nearly killed, the big book says, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see our experience to the benefit of others. When I was in the Youth Authority for all of this, this person and I got together through big book's mediation services, God used us both to heal each other. My last conversation with this person was today. This person remains very, very close to me in my life. We talk frequently, and again, through the grace of God. So I parole about a year and a half early. This is late 90s, and my first day, I parole on a Wednesday morning. I remember this because I show up at the Triangle Fellowship Wednesday night, 8 p.m. It is a candlelight meeting. Thank God it was a candlelight meeting. It is my first AA meeting ever. And I raise my hand somehow and say, look, I paroled today, and I have no idea what to do, and I'm terrified. I don't want to drink or use, but I'm scared, and I need help. And men in those rooms that night reached out to me, men that are still in my life today. And so my life was off and running in AA, and I was very active in the fellowship. I clinged to it. I performed music in clean and sober bands. We used to sing songs about recovery as we're playing music in bars. It was a wonderful time. And this happened for a number of years. And then I did what so many of us do. It's not a mystery what happened. My life is taking off. All of these things in my life are taking off. I get this career in Silicon Valley and in startups. I'm getting married. And Bill talks about how that self-confidence turned into self-centeredness. And so what happened was I began sort of worshiping and running with the fruit of what God was sharing with me in my life. And it was all about me and about my life rather than about God and giving away. And so I start working the steps backwards. I'm going to 3 meetings a week, then 2, then 1. My last sponsee moves away or gets drunk and I don't kidnap another one. My sponsor moves out of the area, I don't get another one. Eventually, over time, I removed myself from the fellowship of alcoholics. In 2006, in a very short period of time, I go through a huge amount of loss. In a 6-month period of time, my grandmother passes away. My other grandmother, 2 months later, my other grandmother passes away. The woman who raised me and took me out of that abusive home, she passed away looking into my eyes and holding my hand. A month later, my father passed away. 2 months later, I go through a divorce. All of this happens in 6 months, this huge amount of loss, and I am disconnected from the fellowship. And it is the day that my father passed away in June 2006 where I relapsed. And I relapsed not by drinking, but I relapsed by taking more pain medication. Then I prescribed this pain medication for some arthritis that I had at the time. I'm trying to get my father's wedding band off his corpse. And to get that image out of my head, I take too much pain medication, so it goes from being medication to a drug. And it wasn't off on the races then, but that was when it switched over. In hindsight, that was the reality. How it works says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, and those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves. Those who are men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And the honesty was that while I was not drinking and during this time, I was not sober. I was in the middle of all this chaos in my life. I was diagnosed with this condition to where you take stimulants as a treatment for it. And never mind that I was in my 30s at this time and not had to do that up to that point. I ran face first into taking those stimulants, and I'm taking this other medication, these pain medication for these back problems. Funny thing today, neither of those medications are necessary in my life, but I've not needed to take them for years. But I use them as a crutch. And so there was a period of time where I came back to the fellowship and I was active in the fellowship, but I was not sober. I was not honest. I was not honest with you, with anybody else. There was years of time where I don't even recognize myself, to where I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief and everything. And so this was me. I get involved with a woman that I should have never got involved with. Truth be told, our relationship can be described in this way. I heard this in an AA talk one time. He said, the horns in my head match the holes in hers. I was in a relationship that I fully earned, was fully participating in the insanity, And when she struck me, after we were married for a month, is when I threw her out and had the locks changed in my house. So what do you do when you go through all of this loss? What you do is you start an online advertising company. And as I'm going through all of this stuff, rather than stopping and turning to people and turning to God, I'm turning to the stimulant medication, and I'm working all these endless hours, flying to New York, doing all of these things. And we built this company, right? I can't be this alcoholic. I can't be this addict. We sell this company to a Fortune 500 for $95 million. And so here I am. I've got this corner office in San Mateo. I've got the executive assistant. You know, I've got all of this stuff. You know, I'm a millionaire, and I'm absolutely miserable. And I'm in the process of throwing this woman out of my life that I've been married to for a month, who I discover I really never knew. And at some point during this time, somehow, some way, I started smoking meth again. And it made perfect sense at the time. And so here's what happened. In a couple of years, I go from having all of these worldly things to being homeless on the streets of Haiti. I lost everything, every relationship, every friendship, everything. Everything that I had. I lost my integrity. I lost my family. I lost everything. And so what was really happening here, though, is I put all of these things between myself and God. And so God was really patient with me for a long
squishies.
Time. More patient than anybody could ever deserve. And so when I, in my ego and my pride, wouldn't turn away from these things, wouldn't surrender, wouldn't seek honesty and help, it pleased God to remove these things one at a time from my life, to remove this position in society, to remove people that I love, to remove friends and family. You know, I am the one who is the alternate DCMC smoking meth at a pre-conference assembly. That's how twisted I was, you know. That's how devastating all of this is. I was absolutely enslaved to these things. And so this is God in his sense of humor. If you know the Hayward area, here I'm homeless and I'm putting a needle in my arm. And my last homeless camp, it didn't take very long for me to be broken finally at this point. And so if you go up the street, Carlos Speed at Cal State Hayward, and you go three billboards up and go to the left or go to the right, you'll see my homeless camp, which is right on this edge. And outside of my tent, because God has a sense of humor, you look right over the edge and you see the parking lot of the church I used to be a member of the worship team in. And if you look down the street, you can see where Triangle Fellowship was on Mission. And that is where God placed me. And in those last weeks of homelessness, I was trying to get out. I was trapped and enslaved. So I went down to the Triangle and I caught a meeting and I could stand being there for 30 seconds. And then I ran. I was full of shame, which is ego in a different way. You know, but I kept coming back, and after, you know, a couple of meetings, and then I meet this man that I used to do meetings with in the morning, and he gives me $10 and makes me promise not to spend it on drugs or alcohol, and I make that promise. I go back to my camp, and my own flesh and blood little brother, who is strung out on the streets with me, steals the money from me. And so this is, I don't know, maybe 1 a.m, something like that same night, and I'm just full of shame and crying, and I'm on the side of that hill, and I think about this life that God had blessed me with all of those years and all of those things that he had walked me through. And if I had died that night, it's like I had never existed. And I cried out to God in my prayer, and it's kind of an odd one, but he let my life mean something to somebody again. And maybe an hour or so later, I leave everything behind to go down to the Triangle Fellowship. I sleep on the sidewalk next to the fellowship, and that man who gave me that $10 got me to Cherry Hill that very day. I met Cherry Hill, this gentleman there, his name is Ralph. And see, my sponsor previously, Ralph's, this woman, what used to be the lead of Cherry Hill, but she had passed away a few years ago of bone cancer. And she had a lot of years in the fellowship, but she was my sponsor's wife. And I'm talking to this guy that had never been to Cherry Hill before, and I tell him, the only thing I know about Cherry Hill is that Melanie used to work here. And he looks at me, and he's like, you knew Melanie? And this guy goes, well, we start talking, and then we find out that we had met before at her funeral. We had both spoken about her, and we're both in tears, and God had brought us together And he goes, I know exactly where you need to go. And he takes a piece of paper and he writes down these four words, Bay Area Rescue Mission. Then he writes a phone number, hands that to me. And 24 hours later, I'm at the rescue mission. I throw myself at God and I surrender to the program completely at this time. I probably cried every night for months, you know, hiding in my room and all of this. And I get through the program and I feel this call to ministry and I respond to that. And so what I'm not doing is AA. I'm doing church. I'm full-time in recovery, doing all of these things, but I'm not working a 12-step program. I'm not doing any of these things. And so what happens, I'm an intern, and we live in this house next to this mission, and my roommate, so what happens is January 1st, a few years ago, I'm in the hospital with the flu, and I come back, and a couple of days after I get back, my roommate gets sick with that flu. He dies of the flu. I find his body, and I never dealt with that. Now, nobody is telling me that I killed him. This was my best friend. But he died of the flu that I gave him. And so they remove all of his things, and he dies, and I go from being an intern to having his job. And I'm working with these chaplains and all of these men that I would go to previously if I had a problem, and my pride prevents me from talking with them. They're my peers. And so this is pride by other means. And so this is about, you know, April of 2018. I realize what I'm missing. It is the fellowship of the 12-step program and all of this. But by this point, my sobriety and my recovery is completely fragile. I go searching for 12-step meetings, and I discover one at the Alano Club, so what happens is on my way walking back, it is Memorial Day weekend 2018, and I have a paycheck on me, and I am off for 3 days, and I discover some lower companionship walking back to the mission. What I don't do is pray. What I don't do is ask God is what I'm doing the right thing. What I do is I'm trying to satisfy this loneliness and this emptiness that I have with something other than God. With, you know, and I go back with this woman, and sometimes, some hours later, she reaches into her nightstand and pulls out a pipe, and I have no defense and didn't even think about it. The next morning, I wake up in her apartment, and my pastor calls, and I lie to him about where I'm at, and right after I hang up, my whole life drops, and I am just absolutely depressed. I'm walking around. I'm in Hayward at the time. I pick up a syringe in a bag, and I'm just, I intentionally try to kill myself by overdosing with meth. I shoot myself up. Hadn't done that in years. And I stumble out of the Lucky's bathroom over to this this bench outside, and I'm losing consciousness, and I can hear my heartbeat, and I'm just full of tears and full of shame, right? And I'm just pleading to God, you know, forgive me. And it's probably the lowest point in my life. And this evangelist comes up to me, and he asks if he could pray with me. And I tell him, and I'm sort of coming in and out of consciousness. And I tell him, I'm sorry, I'm sick, I can't really. And he hands me this Bible tract, and it says, he took the blame. And I don't know why, but in that moment, I knew that I was forgiven, and I knew that it was going to be okay. And I felt physically horrific, but I was at complete and perfect peace. And this man walks away, and I turn to God, and the air is warm, and everything is going on, and I pray to God. I said, God, I can't even stand up right now. Lord, if you take me through this, I'll go back to where I was, and I will face what I've done. And I write, because I don't know if I'm going to die. I don't know what's going on. I've never felt like this. I write on this Bible track, please forgive me. Tell everybody I've gone home. And I write my name on it. And this Bible track is framed right over here on my wall. Sometime later, it could have been hours, it could have been minutes later, I don't know. I'm not sick anymore. and I get up and I leave, and the next morning I call my pastor and he gets me back, and that is my sobriety date, May 28th. He takes me back to, and so here we are in what I pray to be my last bout of recovery and the rest of my life, and this is where we find myself. I go back to Cherry Hill to recover for a couple of days while my pastor makes some phone calls. Of course, I lose my job and all of this. When I'm in Cherry Hill, I get a blood clot in my leg, right? And so I get out of Cherry Hill on my belly button birthday, June 3rd. Now, the day before that, my pastor, 14 years ago, started this house called the CLLC, which is a recovery house in El Sabrante. And he had a conversation with the founder, with him, that day on June 2nd. That was the last conversation this man, Keith Anderson, had ever had that got me the room in the house that I live in right now. Keith died that night. He passed away of cancer. And so on my birthday, I'm brought here to this house in El Sabrante. And I have no income, and rent is due at the end of the month, and I've got a blood clot, and I'm hobbling around. And so what I do is the El Sabrante Fellowship is just down the street. And I show up at 7:30 in the morning meeting, and every day I tell them what I'm going through. I am absolutely terrified, but I have no desire to drink or to use, and I need to get out there. And then I go and do footwork, and that blood clot with my cane was my yardstick about how much I could do without running in fear, right? If I push myself too much, I would be in a lot of pain. I find a job at the Shell gas station about a week later. I find a sponsor. I begin working the steps. I'm doing graveyard in this gas station so that I could go to church on Sundays. All of my old life is destroyed. I accept that, but I'm not giving up because God hasn't given up on me. I went back to him, and when I cried out to him on that thing, and I found, and I learned so much when I call it my ministry of the gas station, because I got to keep the restrooms open all night so EMTs could come in and use the restroom. I got to keep the restroom open so that homeless people could come in and I would pray with them. And I discovered that God would have me do service right in front of my hands. And it didn't matter what it was, that it was right in front of me. And every day I'm at the fellowship, and every day I'm working the steps and talking to my sponsor. And every day God is doing for me what I could not do for myself. I'm 4 months sober, and I'm over here at my house, and I'm smoking a cigarette, and I got to get ready to go to work at the gas station. I get a call from the vice president at the rescue mission saying, hey, this person is retired. Do you want a job? At 4 months sober, I am brought back to working at the rescue mission part-time. And that was just, that was the beginning. That was like a year and a half ago. And so this is what's happening today, that part-time work as an admin turned into full-time work, and it turned into carrying the message to those who were broken just like me. I've started the first AA meeting at the rescue mission, which would still be going on right now, except COVID kind of shut all of that down. I just keep putting one foot in front of the other, one step in front of the other. I begin working with other men. I complete the steps. I'm doing the deal. In March of this year, COVID happened. I'm working at the mission right now, and so nobody knows what's going on. This is brand new. This is before mass. This is before any of that. And we shut down all of our volunteers, and all of our employees with health issues get work furloughed. So there's a men's program with 130 people in the shelter and in the program, and four staff members, and I'm one of the four. And all of a sudden, I'm working every night running the shelter. And these men are terrified. They're absolutely terrified. And I'm just doing the next right thing. Normally it's a 30-day shelter, but what we're doing is we're not getting rid of anybody. We're not expiring. I go to them every day, and God makes it such that we work together, that we're shepherding each other, that it's like I'm the health liaison for the mission. And so I'm getting all this information from the county. And so I go to them and I go, guys, do you have any questions? We're going to keep your bed for as long as you can keep it. Just stay here in the day room. Don't go out on the street. Guys, wear these masks. And it turns into, I saw miracles. I saw men turn to God. I saw hundreds of men turn to God. I would.
Not here for me.
There was.
Here for yourself. So
I can't even express.
The company was owned jointly by two men, Jerry Wall and Bruce Skeller.
I would come home, and I would be absolutely exhausted. And I would be absolutely in tears and gratitude for what God was allowing me to do. And it was all because that no matter how much that I had messed up in the past, how many times I'd screwed up, the doors were always open for me. There was always somebody in the rooms willing to work with me. It was because of AA. And so life today is very, very different. Let's see how much time I've had a few minutes. Life today is very different. We walk through COVID and as things, the time in as of today, this moment, there has not been one single case of COVID at the restaurant. Not one. Not one single case. Because of all of the events that happened and all of that, I was given a promotion. So I supervise at the mission now all of our community outreach ministries, our food distribution warehouse, our soup kitchen, our IT services, all of this. So it was my privilege last month that the men and women who worked with me at the mission served over 130,000 meals just last month. That's what I get to do. That's what I get to do today. The church that I was certain would want nothing to do with me after I relapsed so horribly, I'm now their pastor. The house that I live in, I live in with men of God here that are active in recovery, there are some men here that give me the greatest compliment is they see me before coffee and yet they come to my church anyway. they see me before I'm awake. I've learned today that my alcoholism is God's greatest gift to me. Because it absolutely forces me to rely upon Him. And for me, my entire program is about the principles of the sixth and seventh step. It is all about humility. All of my character defects have to do with my pride and my ego. If I don't practice humility on a daily basis, I will be humiliated. I absolutely will. So I have to put myself in the middle of a group of men all the time who have no problem telling me the truth. I could not do all of these things in my life without AA. In AA, I'm just one of the guys. I'm just one of the guys that has to shut up and get in the truck, right? I'm not Pastor Wayne or Minister Wayne or the manager. I'm just another drunk. I'm just another alcoholic just trying to carry the message. And it is from this place that all of these other wonderful things that God allows me to do, that God has put into my life right now that I get to do. My life is not my own. It belongs to God. To me, the practice of humility is simply to think of God more and myself less. And this is such a wonderful life that He's given me. I could not earn this. I do not deserve this. And I could not be here without the love and support of all of you. Thank you so much.